do not let the second half of the game fool you, because the offense wasn't doing jack. The defense would get worn out and eventually figured out by Tom Brady.
The Cowboys have a very good problem, and that is they know what an elite quarterback looks like. And unfortunately, during this couple months here without Tony Romo, they have to remind themselves of what normal quarterbacks do look like and what a lot of franchises constantly deal with. And that's...
That nothing's written in stone, but they're wide open here. They're wide open to starting Christian Michael. That's a fact. They are hearing the owner say, boy, I sure think that old McFadden had a good game. And the coaching staff is going, what are you talking about? He did not have a good game. Well, that's the way it is. Come on. Come on. That's just the way it is. Things will never be the same. That's just the way it is. Oh, yeah.
All right, all right, all right. You are now rocking with the best. Thank you so much for joining another episode of Cowboys Crunch Time with KD. I am your host, as always, KD Drummond. Find me on CowboysHQ.com and, of course, on Twitter. Follow me at KD Drummond NFL. We are here at the Cowboys bye week. It is week 6. They limp into the bye week on a 3-game losing streak at the record of 2-3, following a 30-6 drubbing at the hands of the New England Patriots. After losing back-to-back games against NFC South foes, they took on their first AFC opponent of the season. Lost badly. Knocked them out of first place. But for some strange reason, I'm still filled with optimism about this team's prospects. Maybe it's because we've got the recent announcement that the Cowboys have decided to make a quarterback change. Today is Wednesday, October 14th. Yesterday, it leaked that they would be replacing Brandon Weeden with Matt Castle. While we don't think that Matt Castle has a skill set that is too much more remarkable than what Brandon Weeden brings to the table, we hope that his experience will allow him to execute the bus driver game plan much better than what we saw Weeden do in his atrocious effort against the New England Patriots. For the first 2 games of his tenure, Weeden was able to complete a high percentage of passes, have the offense scoring 24 points a game, but there were still obvious issues with his decision-making, his accuracy, his willingness to throw receivers open, and that all came to an ugly, evil head against the Patriots. We saw the return of Greg Hardy, who is a manimal out there. Just found out today that he single-handedly has eliminated Nate Solder, the Patriots left tackle, from the rest of the 2015 season. Solder has a torn bicep that undoubtedly occurred when he was reaching, trying to keep a hold on Greg Hardy as he was putting his barrage of pressure on Tom Brady. His return, as well as Rolando McClain, instantly transformed the Dallas defense. As I tweeted, do not let the second half of the game fool you, because the offense wasn't doing jack. The defense would get worn out and eventually figured out by Tom Brady. This is going to be a legit defense. I don't want to take too much of your time, as we are in a bye week, with my spewing vitriol rage in some people's eyes, also known as facts. But this team needs to do, well, let me rephrase that. What this team needs to do is come out of the next 4 games with at the bare minimum 1 victory and most likely 2 before Tony Romo returns. I sincerely think with the defense getting all of these guys back, has a great chance to lead this team as long as the quarterback can do his job. And Whedon apparently cannot do that job. Now, yesterday I had a chance to talk to the one and only Bob Stern, the blog father. He'll be on the show in a second. As soon as the Matt Castle news started to rise, we had a chance to talk about that. What has occurred today is we have found out that the Cowboys are replacing Ron Leary with Lyle Collins at left guard. And apparently Christine Michael is going to get more of a workload at running back. There's been some other tryouts and some other moves that the Cowboys have made. So for that, of course, we will have Cowboys insider Mike Fisher on to talk that out. And all in all, it will be a jam-packed episode of Crunch Time for you, my faithful listeners, who I am honored and humbled that you choose to spend some of your quality Cowboys time with me. So let's get it. Without further ado, the one and only Bob Stern, right here on Crunch Time with KD. And that's my favorite intro music, because anytime we have on this guest, it is a session that you will remember for history. It is the one and only Cowboys blog father, Mr. Bob Stern. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, how's it going? Man, those setups there put so much pressure on me.
Hey, man, you always come through in the clutch, man. It's like you're Tony Romo or something. It's amazing how good you are in the fourth quarter.
Man, that's very nice of you. Thank you. Great to be back with you, by the way.
Yeah, it is a great time to have you on Cowboys Crunch Time here with the Cowboys going into their bye week, or in the midst of their bye week, I should say, and so much is going on through the first five games of the season, moving forward as we prepare for the New York Giants. And like I said, so much going on that we had to get your take on things. I wanted to start it off on a positive note, because losing three in a row, there's, you know, very little that people are smiling about right now. Before we get into the plan conversation that I had for you, it has leaked out that the Cowboys have made the transition from Brandon Whedon to Matt Castle. Castle will step in and take over the starting quarterback role against the New York Giants. Rumor has it that the Cowboys didn't want it to get out, so you kind of got to wonder if it was from Brandon Whedon's camp that kind of let it go when he was informed that he wasn't going to be the starting quarterback. But what's your overall take on the transition, or what Castle can bring that Whedon wasn't bringing?
Well, you know, let's be honest here. Matt Castle and Brandon Whedon are both what they are, which sounds like a trite cliche, but in reality, what it is the fact that the Cowboys have a very good problem, and that is they know what an elite quarterback looks like. And unfortunately, during this couple months here without Tony Romo, they have to remind themselves of what normal quarterbacks do look like, and what a lot of franchises constantly deal with. And that's the Brandon Whedons and Matt Castles of the world. So the idea that Matt Castle can come in here and fix everything is probably far-fetched and fantasy land. However, in looking carefully at these three starts, I think this is a good indication of how fantasy football might lead some fans in the wrong direction, because they automatically look at quarterback numbers. They look at completion percentage. They might look at quarterback rating and say, hey, what's the big deal about Brandon Whedon's job performance? He's doing fine. He's not 7 for 25. He's 22 for 26. How can you guys have a problem with that? And that's why the nuance of football is far different than fantasy football. game of football, your quarterback has to do a number of things well that will never show up on a piece of paper. Pre-snap diagnosing a defense and making sure you're in the right play. There was a case on Sunday, for instance, where the Patriots were overloaded defensively to the left, and the Cowboys ran a play right into the teeth of it when they were clearly outnumbered in pre-snap. And I'm not saying Brandon Whedon has the authority to audible out of that, because I don't know. But any quarterback, you might even burn a timeout there, because you're just not going to run into the teeth of the strength of the defense at that level of football and get away with it. So that's a case. And then once the play happens, once the chaos of a play is going on, can he read a defense? Can he get off his first option and do more than just the panic check down? And then the third thing is, when you do see an opportunity, can you put a pass somewhere in the vicinity so that your receiver has a chance? And unfortunately, in these three games, despite rather proficient ability to dump it off and play a rather safe style of quarterback, unfortunately, beyond that, he had no real pre-snap recognition that I could detect, no real in-play ability to read a defense and decipher what they're doing to you, and then certainly no interest or ability to take chances or take opportunities. I hate to say chances, that sounds risky, but the quarterback game is taking opportunities down the field not only get yards, but also to back off the safeties and give your running game a chance. So just on all those counts, Whedon was not passing the test. So then you come around to, well, is Matt Cassel the answer? And there's a lot of people that are now acting like if Cassel doesn't throw for 360 and four touchdowns, they're going to be mad at those of us who thought this had to happen. I would say curb your enthusiasm. And this is not a fight between Brandon Whedon and Matt Cassel. This is simply an alternative idea, because Whedon has shown what he's capable of and, more importantly, what he's incapable of. And now that Belichick pretty much gave the entire blueprint for keeping the Cowboys under 10 points, which is doubling Beasley and Witten underneath, I think the Cowboys were almost painted into a corner where they had to give Cassel a chance. And, you know, Cassel's got 34 NFL wins. I know wins are not a quarterback stat, it's a team stat, right? But 34 of those versus 5 for Whedon, I think it's worth a shot. I think it's vital the Cowboys go 2-4 in the next four games, or 2-2 in the next four games here. And I just don't think Whedon was going to get them there. It's possible Cassel will. So although Cassel, I don't think, is the answer to too many problems, he might at least give you a reasonable to slight upgrade over what you're currently working with. And maybe that's enough to scratch out a win or two.
Yeah, you hit on all of the points that I had talked about since Romo went down. The true downgrade from Romo to Whedon was a loss of the mental aspect of playing quarterback. The things you mentioned, the pre-snap reads, working with Frederick to get the line calls correct, all of those sorts of things that Tony Romo has basically become a master of in the back half of his career. I think that's really what elevated him to an MVP-like performance in 2014, his overall mastery of the field, and things have just slowed down so much for him. And then you see the stark contrast when you're watching Whedon out there and just completely overlooking open receivers, and his progressions just seem to be off. It's just a stark contrast between the two.
You know, what we talk about with a quarterback and when he's drafted, that he might need 2 or 3 years to kind of figure out the NFL game. They're not talking about his ability to throw a spiral or, to throw a post route or a dig or a corner route or something like that. They're talking about just the mental aptitude to understand how complex, running an offense is in the NFL. So that's where Whedon lacks, and that's kind of where he's always lacked. And maybe Matt Cassel in 72 or so NFL starts has a better mental aptitude for the game of football, even if his arm is certainly not something that's going to wow the crowd.
Now, I wrote an article last week where I didn't straight out rip the coaching staff, but I kind of took them to task for their share of blame, because obviously – when the Cowboys lose, everybody wants to say, well, it was A. No, it was B. And instead of saying, well, it's pretty much, you know, a combination of everything. A lot of people aren't doing their jobs to the point of being able to help this team win. So I wanted to focus on the coaching staff when I wrote this article, for them not doing their part while Romo and Dez are out as far as them stepping up. We saw the issues with – I had big issue with Lance Dunbar on kickoff returns to begin with. And if Lucky Whitehead isn't the answer, why is he on the roster? The Atlanta timeout before halftime, the no New Orleans timeout when Gashkar gets injured, just things like that slipping through the cracks for this team. And basically, to me, it reverted to what we've said about the Jason Garrett regime all the way up until last year when things miraculously changed. So my question is this sort of who they are and the greatness of Tony Romo last year kind of masked that issue of the coaching staff? Or do you think that it's just more so me finding something to complain about with the coaching staff?
Well, there's no question if you're a good team and maybe bordering on a really good team, you can overcome a lot of things. You can overcome a bad interception. You can overcome a bad coaching decision in a game. I mean, the margin for error for the 2014 Dallas Cowboys was actually quite big. It surprised us, but it was pretty clear by December 1st that this team was pretty legit. And that they could beat most teams and most, and it didn't really matter where the game was played or how the game was played. The Cowboys were pretty good, and they did not have to play perfect games to survive. And so, yeah, if you take away, you know, a MVP candidate at quarterback and another MVP candidate at running back, and maybe even another top 3 to 5 wide receiver in the sport, you take all those away, your margin for error drops every time. And so now these small errors or at least the normal size errors in football, their importance swings your ability to overcome them to a point where, you know, if you mess up 3 decisions in a game with the 2014 Cowboys, you might probably still win. But with the 2015 Cowboys in this current state, blowing that timeout situation against Atlanta right before halftime, that only dings you for a field goal, but that might be the difference between winning and losing with this crew. And yeah, absolutely, the idea of not banging a timeout with that 12 man on the field, or even the Gashkar injury in overtime, those are 2 big coaching issues as well there. And so you just start going down the list, and maybe we revert a little bit to the 2013 Cowboys or the 2012. I guess it was 2012 maybe where the game in Arizona was such a debacle, and it looked like Jared was kind of clueless. Well, the reason those decisions stuck out to us so much was that was a 500 team just scratching and clawing and trying to get the 9 wins by any means necessary. So this is, you know, this is kind of how football works, is that the coaches on the lesser teams, they make bad decisions. So do the coaches on the best teams. You know, I can speak with great authority that Mike McCarthy makes a lot of mistakes, but most of them are erased with a really good quarterback who can cover up a lot of problems. But this is just not the year the Cowboys can afford trips and falls at various spots. And you know, I think that's illuminated from quarterback play Whedon only threw that one horrible interception against Atlanta. What's the big deal? We've seen 3 interception, 4 interception games. Why are you guys so mad about one? The reason we're so mad about one is that one was all that they could handle. And that kind of broke the dam right there. And then, you know, on Sunday there were a couple other throws. Maybe more the ones that bothered me from the Patriots game are maybe the missed opportunities more than the bad throws. But anyway, when it comes to quarterback and coaching, your margin for error obviously is on a sliding scale. And as we see, until Dez and Romo return, and, you know, we've been saying until Greg Hardy and Rolando McClain can get here, they've been down so many pieces that their margin for error is pretty much down to nothing.
Indeed. And we are rocking with one of the best people that you can ever ask a Cowboys question to, so we're going to milk every ounce out of the situation we can. Of course, the one and only Bob Sturm. Follow him on Twitter at SportsSturm. You will not be disappointed. Let's switch to the defense. You mentioned Greg Hardy, and, you know, Dallas has had a problem with the pass rush for years. and they add a premier pass rusher, and voila, they have a bona fide pass rush against the Patriots. Five sacks in the first half. Brady had only been sacked six times on the entire season up until that point. Now, it came with a bit of a twist as we saw the Cowboys running a dime formation, three down linemen, two backers, six defensive backs. Talk to me about what you saw. You're my X's and O's guy, along with obviously my guy, Joey Ikes. Talk to me about what you saw in that dime formation.
Well, I mean, it was pretty interesting. The basic 3-2 front that they rolled out is not what we expected. We expected kind of the normal four down linemen with one linebacker behind it. And this, you know, when you look at it, obviously the difference between a 3-4 and a 4-3 is more of the ability of a 3-4 defense to kind of ambush you and who's coming and who's not, whereas a four down defensive line, it's you know exactly who's rushing and who's not, but it's but they're comfortable with pretty much stating they're following. So I really like this, only from a standpoint that I think Rolando McClain can certainly bring the pain in his own right, especially with a running start. So what the benefit of three down linemen and two linebackers gives you, of course, as those linebackers come with a head of steam, they can pick the routes that they want to take to the quarterback. They can certainly hide behind a defensive tackle or twist around a defensive tackle and roll out on the other side. So I think they were able to cross New England up tactically quite a bit. I don't know that future opponents will be as surprised, because the Cowboys were clearly saving that for one ambush opportunity. It might be a look they go with more, but I still think in a perfect world, we're going to get to a point where you have Greg Hardy and Tyrone Crawford inside and Randy Gregory and DeMarcus Lawrence or Jeremy Mincy on the outside. And I think those four probably make more sense long-term than McClain. But I think McClain, you know, gives you another option, and he obviously is still a tremendous football player. I just don't know that I love him on nickel downs more than I love you know, the option I just said. So they really, the key with Hardy is he's just doggone good. And what makes him really impressive is not only does he have a quickness around the edge that we saw where he just made Nate Solder look silly, but he also can go in, he can go inside and just push guys around in there. So Hardy's a special player. He's obviously a talking point for a lot of people, but if you just get down to analyzing him as a football player, which is pretty much all I ever want to do, I just think he's so darn impressive, and he changes everything. And I think if you can put that next to what Randy Gregory showed us in training camp and even the first part of that Giants game, I think the Cowboys' pass rush is going to be pretty sweet, and I think we started to see that on Sunday. So there's a fair amount of optimism. Now, the secondary certainly got gashed quite a bit on Sunday, but I don't know necessarily if there's a great way to defend the Patriots' scheme with the rub routes and the pick plays and the fact that it borders on being illegal. You know, they're great at what they do. I don't know necessarily how you scheme against it. I just think you try to, you know, it's almost like playing Baylor in that you just hope that they throw an incomplete pass once in a while to give you a break. If they're on with that scheme, the beauty of it is it's just so impossible to stop, especially with the personnel they have, where they got those little guys who run that scheme perfectly, and then they can just line Gronk up by himself on the other side. And if you're not double teaming him, they're going to go to him all day long, because he can just overpower any defensive back you put out there. He overpowers him, any linebacker, he runs past him. And so they're the Patriots for a reason, aren't they?
Hey, you were a lot more politically correct in your framing of the Patriots offense than I would have been, because you said borderline illegal. Those pick plays need to be outlawed from the NFL immediately. Not immediately, immediately.
Probably.
It's indefensible.
Well, it is, and I look at it from a slightly different perspective, just saying if the Broncos and if the Patriots and if the Saints and if the Packers and if everyone who is at the top of the league is going to use it, then you might ask your offensive coaches, They're clearly not calling it, or if they are calling it, they're calling it twice a game or once a game, which you might just say, well, that's part of the cost of doing business. Let's run it 20 times, get offensive pass interference once or twice. I keep coming back to, what is it about Jason Garrett and Scott Linehan that prefers not to employ those tactics? I remember it a little bit last year. A couple times they would run it, and I know they have concepts like everyone does, but man, it would seem like with Cole Beasley and Lance Dunbar when he was healthy, that screen that the Cowboys should be not petitioning to the league to take him away, but trying to figure out how to copy what the Patriots are doing, because nobody, even the Seahawks, can really slow that down.
Well, I'm long past the point of hoping that Jason Garrett does something that would be considered overly creative. He believes in his system. He believes in sticking to it. You're never going to see a trick play out of this guy. And I wouldn't call a pick play, a pick route or a rub route a trick play, but it just doesn't seem to fall into the wheelhouse of what he finds acceptable offense. So yeah, to me, it falls into the category of what the Seahawks do on defense. They are overly physical and grabby, and they just challenge the referees to call it. And the referees simply aren't going to call it every time. So they get away with it 80% of the time, and it turns them into a great dynamic. So.
It's Pippen and Jordan playing defense, getting really physical. They're not going to call it every time. And then by the end of the game, the other team is either exhausted, beat up, or spending all their time complaining to the refs, and you're getting away with it again because the league understands that blowing whistles and throwing flags the entire night is horrible television. So they're only going to call the most severe infractions, and they're going to let everything else go. So the Patriots realize this, and that's why they win 13 games a year. And you're right. Garrett isn't much on innovation. If he had his way, he would run the 92 Cowboys offense, and that's there's nothing wrong with that. But as far as hoping he would watch Thursday Night Football and watch the Patriots and say, hey, I got an idea here. That's probably not going to happen.
No, he believes in what he believes in, and that's all there is to it. You did bring up a great point earlier that I want to circle back around to when we were talking about the pass rush. And the edict is always the pass rush helps the secondary helps the pass rush. You know, it has that that kind of relationship. But I have to wonder, when I watch these games and I watch – and I hate to slander a player that does things that I could only dream about doing. I don't put myself in the wheelhouse of being a know-it-all or anything like that. But when I watch the Cowboys safeties, I feel a sense of dread on a weekly basis. Tackling has gone downhill. Angles are still questionable. Is there any way that the Cowboys can truly have an elite defense with the safeties, not including Byron Jones, because that might be the transition that they're trying to make as quickly as possible. But with Church and Wilcox, the way that they play, isn't that last line of defense being so leaky and so questionable something that would pretty much always stop this team from becoming an elite defense?
That's a fair question. As I look back at 2014, I'm overall, I was pretty satisfied with the safety play from the basis of they made sure that there were not too many big plays. If you look back at last season and you're just trying to run through your head about the big giant defensive letdowns, safeties weren't involved too terribly often. So I started thinking maybe Wilcox is turning a corner and maybe Barry Church is figuring it out. And this year the Cowboys have really moved their coverages, and I just don't have time to basically go through all the coverages from last season so that I had something to compare it to. But I swear the Cowboys were way more cover three last year, and this year they're way more cover one. I just don't, I like to quantify that, and I just don't know necessarily what the numbers are, but it seems like they're in cover one all day now, with man free, man in the hole running around with the robber, and that's often Barry Church, or it could be somebody like McClain or Sean Lee. But what that means though is way more exposure to man coverage, of course, and way more dependency that your safety can clean up messes. And so as we've gone through these first 5 weeks, maybe the safeties are way more exposed in this situation than they were last year. And maybe, and I'm using maybe a lot here, but it's difficult to speak in absolutes, but it does seem like in 2015 we have raised our eyebrows at the safety play far more. Is that scheme based? We're asking more of them, and therefore they might not be capable of more. Is that we're missing Skandrick? We're missing a pass rush until this past Sunday. There's something to what you're saying. And certainly Wilcox, taking a bad angle on Julio Jones didn't help. And even the Barry Church trying to get C.J. Spiller down in New Orleans. Their fingerprints are on more crime scenes in 2015. I'm just trying to figure out if the Cowboys are trying to do something they may not have the perfect personnel for. And that's why coming out of the bye week, maybe we see more Byron Jones. And maybe we see more Corey White. I think they want to play more aggressive defense, and that might mean more pressure on their secondary than we saw last year, where they generally had seven guys back in coverage and they were all helping each other. This year it looks a little more like, look, you got to get this guy on your own, and we'll have a safety back to try to clean up messes. So it's a subtle change. I think close observers are aware of it. But I'm not positive nationally. People know how different the Cowboys defense seems to be running this year to last.
Yeah, I think the loss of Skandrick changed everything for the way that the secondary had the potential to play, because I could have easily seen a secondary that had, Carr and Moe on the outside, Skandrick in the slot, and then putting Corey White as the center fielder and having Byron Jones playing the Darren Woodson role, in the slot on the tight end, doing those sorts of things. But alas, we don't have Skandrick, so we might not ever see what they fully intended. And they're just in scramble mode and trying to figure out what to do with the pieces that are left.
Yeah. I think that's right. And honestly, when Skandrick went down, I kind of wondered if they were going to scrap their plans of all this man coverage, but nope, full steam ahead. So I guess we respect that, but now they got to make it work long term. The good news is there aren't too many games against the Patriots on the schedule.
Right. Yeah, that makes all the difference in the world, because as I've said since the preseason, the Patriots aren't they're at a double middle finger mode to the entire NFL, and they're just a juggernaut right now. So I would not be surprised to see them standing at 16-0 at the end of the season. So no shame in going down to the Super Bowl champs. Before I let you go, I want to talk about the running game. Yeah, because obviously that's the talk of everybody. The Cowboys were so dynamic last year, and they're struggling so much this year. So let's break it down quickly, piece by piece. Are the Cowboys, scheme-wise, inviting teams to load the box based on the formations that they run?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot to that, but we got a little bit drunk on success last year with this running game.
Oh yeah,
and that's cool. Some of the superlatives out in the spring and summer are now looking a little foolish. The idea that this is the best offensive line in football, it could be one of the best of all time. You could put a chicken back there running back and he'll be fine running behind the line. I mean, just all of these things. We don't know if they would have figured it out with Romo and Dez, but given the circumstances they're facing, their running game has been made to look pretty pedestrian, and with that is the idea that playing into tendencies and just being super, super predictable or stubborn or however you want to say it. The Cowboys haven't quite really adjusted yet, and I wonder if they're going to do some self-scouting this week and say, you know what, we can't run the ball 85% of the time when we're under center and 70% of the time on first and 10. And I think that first and 10 number on run plays, that shoots up to well over 80% if you modify it for game situations where they're not a mile behind or they're not in a 2 minute drill. They're right. You know, even Sunday, their first 8 first downs, 7 were runs and 1 was a quick pass to Randall, which was essentially a run. And you know, they're kind of using last year's template, even though defenses don't respect last year's offense, nor should they, by the way. The NFL is it's like a 3 week league, and you probably know this, but I, you know, the average listener may be interested to know that usually when you prepare a game plan, you're using the last 3 to 4 games, and those are the reels you're breaking down, and those are the tendencies you're worried about. So any idea that teams are looking at the 2014 Cowboys to prepare for the 2015 Cowboys, that might be true with division rivals who have plenty of time in February and March, but the week-to-week opponents, the Patriots or the Seahawks or any of these one-off opponents this season, they're only using the last month of material for the most part to prepare. And so when they look at this team and they see how predictable the run counts are and really how often it's outside zones versus inside and how little they use man blocking these days, I think the count is almost 90% zone blocking. And of that, it's I want to say 2/3 outside zone stretch plays. Yep. And so forth. It's not complicated. So on first down, if it's a neutral score situation, the Cowboys are running most likely an outside zone play on first and 10. That's just, you know, that's any opponent who doesn't sit on that is stupid. And so what that means, of course, is we are crowding the box. And that's why any sort of criticism towards the offensive line, you know, I don't want to protect them. I don't want to say they've been perfect because, as you detailed earlier, when a team is losing games, there's usually 20 culprits, not one. Right. And there's no question there have been occasions where the Cowboys offensive line is not impressed. A little bit at Philadelphia and a lot against Atlanta come quickly to mind as it wasn't because there were 9 in the box. It was because their guys up front whipped our guys up front on a few occasions. It happens. It's the NFL. They pay their players too. But overall, I would say it is a math game. And not to reference Baylor again, but I was watching something about, you know, their coaching staff and the fact that they really think so much of their scheme is just based on being able to count. And if you can count, then you know what we should be doing on this play. And it's just simply counting the defenders in the box. And if we can get enough defenders to sit on the pass, we're going to run. And if we have enough sitting on the run, we're going to pass, and it's just that simple. Well, the Cowboys have been unable to do that. This is no secret. I'm not breaking news here. But the defenses know on first and second down, here are the 3 likely options. Let's sit on them. Let's have our safeties and linebackers heading north to get into the run fits and to really make sure that any of those combo blocks that the Cowboys try to run, they're just outnumbered. And so when you say, how's the offensive line looking this year, Bob? I would say, well, honestly, they're blowing a few blocks here and there, but you know what? They did in 2014 as well, but the numbers are just off. And that means there's no 2 guys clouding over Dez Bryant. There's no fear of Tony Romo. All that's gone, and that changes everything. And this, you know, this idea, and I tried to quiet it in the springtime, but nobody wanted to hear it because the Cowboys almost made the Super Bowl last year. But any of this nonsense that this is now like Nebraska in the 80s and they'll just run for 300 yards against everybody and it doesn't matter. It's just that's not the NFL. The NFL, even bad rushing defenses, if they decide we're going to stop the run, they're going to stop the run. If there's no threat of an aerial bomb over their head.
Right.
NFL defenses are just too good, and there's nothing 5 offensive linemen or 5 and a tight end or 5 and 2 tight ends are going to do against 9 guys in the box who are determined to stop the run. So I think, and we, you know, on our show, we pretty much predicted this, that when Dez Bryant got hurt in week 1, this is when Romo was healthy. We talked about this. So yep. Romo's still healthy, but Dez is gone. we did a segment saying, you know what, the running game is going to regress substantially. It's not going to look good, and everyone's going to blame DeMarco Murray being gone. They're going to blame Bill Callahan being gone. They're going to blame everything, and really all it is Dez Bryant's gone. And when Dez returns, the math is going to get squared away. When Tony Romo returns, the math is going to go back, and I bet you that the running game may not ever approach DeMarco Murray levels with this cast of characters, but I'm pretty sure the running game will be back to getting, you know, 130 and 135 yards a game, which is probably all anybody wants.
Yeah, I, as most of my listeners know, I don't live in the Dallas area, so I didn't get a chance to see the beginning of the Cowboys game because the Cleveland-Baltimore game went into overtime. So I didn't get a chance to go back and watch that until Monday. So I put the tape on, and the very first play of the game, I see the Cowboys. The Patriots had 9 men basically in the box within 7 yards of the line of scrimmage, and the Cowboys still ran the ball. I said, well, that explains everything. that explains right. How the rest of the game broke down. Their refusal to even change the first play of the game, looking at 9 men staring you in the face right there, and they still ran it, got 2 yards, of course, that's all they could get. I just knew immediately there how it basically explained how I saw the rest of the game play out. Because in essence, when the Cowboys spread it out, it seemed like there was room for Joseph Randle to run. But for some reason, they do this, and this has been a complaint of myself and Jeff Cavanaugh on 105.3, that the Cowboys, for some reason, are committed to stuffing their offensive line, their tight ends, and multiple sets. Multiple tight end sets and trying to run and bully people as opposed to spreading them out and taking better advantage of one-on-one matchups. And it's just confounding to me that they would continue to do that when there's no threat over the top to try to loosen up the defense. It doesn't make much sense to me.
Yeah. And that goes back to, you know, when we talked about coaching, and I didn't really hit on this earlier, but I think it stands to reason is they just simply have to cross up the tendencies. They can't run the ball 85 to 90% when they're under center, pass the ball 85 to 90% when they're in shotgun. And trust me, they're doing that right now. We keep the numbers closely, and they are absolutely so predictable, it's not even funny. And it's really, really important that you, especially when you have no advantage at the quarterback position, that you just don't play into those tendencies. You've got to keep the defense off balance. And furthermore, you've got to roll the dice a little bit more. And that's why, you know, while I don't think Matt Castle is anyone's savior, I do think Whedon has proven he's not. And they just have to have the faith that once in a while we're going to take a chance down the field. We're going to take an opportunity, as I said earlier. And, you know, honestly, they can't be kicking field goals at the 5-yard line. They just have to realize that the risk taking is vital right now, and they are playing it close to the vest, and that's not going to work.
Oh yeah, you know, this is the type of team that throws 3 consecutive fades to Terrence Williams at the goal line. So, but we can't complain about it because sooner or later somebody will come save us. His name is Tony Romo. We just hope that the season isn't lost by the time he gets back. Mr. Sturm, it is my esteemed pleasure, as always, to chop it up with you here on the show. You are welcome back anytime. I feel like I'm imposing if I ask you to come on more frequently than I do. But you are definitely a blessing to our listeners, and you give the knowledge all the time. For those of you out there, make sure you're following him on Twitter at SportsSturm, and he is on Dallas Morning News daily. If you aren't reading his pieces, his analysis, his Marinelli report, and basically everything that he produces is Cowboys gold. So make sure you're checking it out on a regular basis. Mr. Sturm, thank you for your time, sir.
Well, it's very nice of you to say all that. And I, you know, while a guest might say this, what I'm about to say, and you might just say, well, he's just saying that. I'm really not. Seriously, ask me anytime. I'm happy to do it. It's fun popping on.
All right, man. We're going to chat again real soon then.
Okay, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care. And again, that is the one and only Bob Sturm here on Cowboys Crunch Time with KD. We're going to take a quick musical interlude and be right back with you.
Fist don't fry in the
We are moving on up to our favorite segment of the show. It is time for Hook, Line, and Sinker with the Fish. The one and only Cowboys insider, Mike Fisher, joins us here on Crunch Time. My man Fish, how goes it, sir?
Well, it's we got Rangers and Mavericks, Stars and Cowboys. So Dallas is on fire right now.
It's a full slate for the DFW right now. Obviously, we're recording while the Rangers are trying to keep their postseason alive and move on to the next round. By the time most people listen to this, the decision will already be made. So we will move past that. But yes, it is a Mavs preseason. The Stars have started the NHL season, and it's just a fun time to be a sports fan all around. But nothing beats being a sports fan of the Dallas Cowboys franchise. And once again, it's been a whirlwind 36 hours for the club. Obviously, the biggest news is that they have moved on from Brandon Whedon as the backup starting quarterback for the Cowboys and handed the keys over to Matt Cassel. Amongst other moves that came out today, let's tackle that one first because that actually leaked yesterday, probably at the hands of Brandon Whedon and his people after he was informed of the switch. Let me ask you for your take on it. Is this the move that the coaching staff made, or is there a hint of a little bit of front office interaction going on here?
The quarterback move was made by the coaching staff. And
okay.
It was made along with the recognition, and I think this is so important for Cowboy fans to understand, they are not changing to a better quarterback. They are just changing quarterbacks. Matt Cassel's not inherently better than Brandon Whedon. You know, one of them was a first-round draft pick. Another one was a seventh-round draft pick. One of them has more skins on the wall than Cassel. The other one, you know, was viewed to have more promise coming out of the draft. But you're changing bus drivers. And I keep trying to suggest that the reason the coaches are doing this is the placebo effect. They are feeding Valley Ranch a sugar pill, hoping that Valley Ranch, in its hypochondriac sick state, will feel like, oh, good, it's a miracle solution. I feel so much better. And it can really have a positive effect, but it is a placebo effect.
Yeah, I can definitely see your point on that. From my point of view, the issue with Brandon Whedon didn't really bubble over until this game against New England, where you saw him wildly erratic on some of his passes. And I mean, there were some plays where he had four people wide open. You know, obviously Matt Cassel is here to drive the bus. He's not going to come in here and be slinging it all over the field. I believe he's already made a comment today that basically said, you know, don't pick on Whedon. The game plan is to not go deep. And, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but that seemed to be the intention behind his words when he talked to the media. So the question, I guess, remains is Cassel and hopefully the shortcomings that Whedon has, and every quarterback approaches the game differently, are the shortcomings that Whedon had the reason that the Cowboys weren't able to have success against Atlanta and New Orleans? Because for all intents and purposes, New England was going to be a loss. I think most people can agree with that. Without all your guns, it's very tough to beat New England. But was Whedon the reason that they lost the previous two games? Can Cassel improve on that in the next four games? I guess we'll see which way it plays out.
Yeah, I guess my point is, and this isn't anti-Cassel or pro-Whedon, this is just a fact, that the fact that Whedon checked down too often or missed receivers deep or was reluctant to throw deep, I don't know that Matt Cassel won't do the exact same thing. You're changing bus drivers. You're not changing from Brandon Whedon to Tony Romo. You're not changing from Brandon Whedon to John Elway. You're changing from Brandon Whedon to Brandon Whedon. And the club and the people in the building feel good about it because you have to change something. You can't go 0-3 and recognize the emotion and psyche that is tied to the position of quarterback and not make a change. You just can't. This was very predictable, but not because the next guy is more talented. It's predictable because the next guy is the next guy.
Well, I made a comment at the end of the game on Sunday that Brandon Whedon's body language down the stretch is what lost him the starting quarterback, is what lost him the position. Because you saw Jason Garrett coming on the field basically pleading with him to not give up on himself and the team, even though that they were, you know, down 24 points or whatever it was as things were winding down. But it was at that moment that I said Jason Garrett just changed his mind about Brandon Weeden being sticking with Brandon Weeden as his quarterback. And sure enough, 48 hours later, we had the change. But that wasn't the only change that the Cowboys made. Today, I woke up, I went into work, and I was greeted on my Twitter timeline with the one and only Mike Fisher telling us that the Cowboys were giving first-team reps not only to Matt Cassel, but also to Christian Michael and Lyle Collins. And those are also big deals for the Cowboys offense. So talk to me about where those moves generated from.
Yeah, and my man, Ed Werder, was talking about this about, I think I got a phone call at 7 a.m. and we put up our story at 7:16. So Ed Werder was very much in that mix. Now, the difference between Ed's take on this and my take on this is Ed is writing this like it's all etched in stone. And I'm not willing to go there. Lyle Collins was told, you're going to be the starting left guard. Christian Michael was not told, you're going to be the starting running back.
Right, okay.
Matt Cassel was told, you're going to be the starting quarterback. They're not going to change out of the quarterback decision anytime soon. But Lyle Collins has to play well, or this big movement. And Collins himself said today, he goes, you know, this is the start of something big for me. This is the beginning of my career. And I believe that's true. But if he plays poorly, he's going to get replaced. And if Christian Michael practices poorly next Wednesday, he's going to start. So I think we need to write these things in pencil and go forward. And that's the only difference between my position and Ed's position. But the coaching staff thinks it's time to take a look at Michael, and they're right. And ownership is pleased with the idea of taking a look at Lyle Collins, if you know what I mean, and I know you do.
You know I know what you mean, and that's why I asked the question the way that I did.
Right.
So that I think my concern is that part of the offensive line's issues on why they haven't been the much ballyhooed unit that we thought they were going to be has been the injuries robbed them of working together in the preseason, and then they carried over some of those injuries into the regular season. Because Ron Leary has his issues, but we've seen him at his pinnacle shut down J.J. Watt. So we know he has talent in that body. He looked atrocious against the Patriots on Sunday.
Right.
Is he still hurt? Is his groin still giving him problems? Because he came back pretty quickly.
He's got to be. And remember, he had a little back problem, too. I think he did what football players do. He felt the challenge from the golden guy behind him. And he rubbed some dirt on it, and he said, I'm okay. And he battled through it. And I give him credit for this. Doug Freeze doing the same thing. Doug Freeze's not right. And I would suggest that Zach Martin and his neck have not been right over the course of the last 5 weeks. But they duct taped themselves together, and that's what they do. But Jordan Ross had a great number on Lyle Collins versus Ron Leary. Ron Leary is, he gives up sacks, he gives up hits, he gives up hurries. A few of them. Lyle Collins, in 57 snaps, hasn't given up a sack, a hit, or a hurry.
Not a single one.
That's a really good place to start if you want to support the argument of LC as the new LG.
And that just leaves us with the Christian Michael talk. Obviously, you alluded to the fact I had to not really backtrack on a tweet, but I initially tweeted that they were in line to start, and obviously – just him getting first-team reps does not indicate that. I believe with the presser, Jason Garrett did indicate that Randall was still the starter, but he wanted to get Michael more involved in the Cowboys' game plan, which to me indicates that they've done a shift, and Darren McFadden is probably, depending on how Michael performs in practice, going to settle into being a poor man's Lance Dunbar, being the passing game back. But the Cowboys also made another move because they had workouts after practice today. And, well, I'll let you carry it from there. Talk to me about what happened post-practice and the moves that the Cowboys made at the position.
Well, and all of this establishes, again, that nothing's written in stone, but they're wide open here. They're wide open to starting Christian Michael. That's a fact. They are hearing the owner say, boy, I sure think that old McFadden had a good game. And the coaching staff is going, what are you talking about? He did not have a good game. He had a good game for fantasy owners, but he did not play well. Joseph Randall did not play consistently well. And so they give the tryouts to a couple guys that are scat back types. Pete was one of them, and then LaMike James. And I believe that they wanted LaMike James to do really well. I believe they were prepared to have it work, and they were going to add him. Not unlike, if you'll recall, Christian Ponder and that workout. Remember that deal?
Right, yep, a couple weeks ago.
You know, they weren't going to trade for Matt Cassel. They were going to sign Christian Ponder. But then the workout didn't go great. Same thing happened today, I think. The workout didn't go great with Mike James. So they turned to a completely different style runner in Rod Smith, former Ohio Stater, who had some behavioral problems there. He's 6'3", 231. He's a gigantic kid, and I don't know if he can play running back in the NFL. What's really fascinating about it, KD, and establishes, once again, they're wide open here. You could paint them as grasping for straws. I choose not to do that. I choose to say they're wide open for answers. Rod Smith returned kicks at Ohio State.
Mm.
At 6'3", 231, he was a kick returner. And so you talk about an out-of-the-box attempt at trying to find answers, maybe instead of the scat back kick returner, because LaMike James is a kick returner most of all. Maybe
right.
The reason you have Rod Smith is you want to see if you can have a downhill runner as a kickoff returner.
And the amazing thing is they claimed him from Seattle. The Dallas-Seattle dance with these running backs is obviously interesting. They traded for Christian Michael, conditional seventh-round pick for him in the 2016 draft. Rod Smith, I guess, was on their either way from them or on their practice squad, so they got him. And, of course, the guy that's currently filling in for Marshawn Lynch is Thomas Rawls, who the Cowboys thought – They legitimately thought that they had an agreement with after the draft as an undrafted free agent, and Rawls changed his mind and signed with Seattle. That could have been the Cowboys rookie runner. I have a new article up on Cowboys HQ talking about the 2015 rookie running back class, and in there I obviously have to mention Rawls. They were this close, and I'm pinching my fingers together, they were this close to having that guy in their backfield and possibly being the solution that they keep trying to turn over. So they have a lot of respect for what Seattle's doing in their running back class, and now they have taken another guy from their stable.
Well, and this is why, and I really enjoy Twitter, but this is why it also frustrates me. But I've got a lot of guys coming at me and saying, the Cowboys should have signed Thomas Rawls. Well, but they did, almost.
Right.
And then he said, I'm gonna date somebody else. I mean, what are you supposed to do?
Right. You can't grab him by the hair.
Right. The Cowboys scouting department basically viewed Thomas Rawls as worthy of their eighth round pick in a seventh round draft. And unfortunately, Seattle viewed him as the same thing, and that's that. Now, one of these days, somebody's going to ask Thomas Rawls, why did you pick a team that already has Marshawn Lynch instead of a team that was running back by committee? Because it doesn't, on paper, on surface, doesn't make any sense, does it?
No, not to me. I mean, if you were choosing between the two, I don't know if Seattle gave him a bigger signing bonus or made him a bigger promise. That, hey, Lynch is going to be here just for one more year, or,
Obviously,
we'll need to hear that from him.
Maybe he's friends with Marshawn Lynch, or, I don't know. Who knows? But your piece today on running back by committee and what might have been, I think is really instructive, because there's so many, you know, what Atlanta's doing is really interesting. That's supposed to be Coleman's job. And Coleman, I think, was a terrific prospect and still is. We agree, right?
Almost definitely. He ran for 2,000 yards on a broken foot. So I completely agree that he's still a top prospect.
Cowboys loved him. But then he kind of he hurt his ribs just a little bit. He's not dead. He's okay. Well, they might never put him on the field again in Atlanta.
I mean, right.
That guy, Devontae Freeman, who started his role against Dallas, I don't know if anybody thought of this besides you and me. He's an MVP candidate. For reals. Who in the NFC?
He is.
What's Atlanta's record?
5-0, undefeated.
Okay, and they play in the weakest division in football, right?
That's what everybody said at the beginning of the year, but they're sitting there with two undefeated teams right now.
That's true. But if Atlanta wins that division and he continues on, Devontae Freeman does anything like he's doing, he's going to finish behind the Aaron Rodgers. I mean, he's going to finish in the top five in MVP voting. And who planned that? Obviously, Atlanta didn't. Otherwise, they wouldn't have drafted somebody to play above him. So
exactly.
There is no exact science here. It's not a science at all, frankly.
Yeah, no, that's what it is with the draft. It's a crapshoot. You do all your scouting. You hope that the guy fits your system. And as you can see in the article, not everybody that was planned to be a super stud is coming through. You have, you know, Todd Gurley at the top, and then the other rookie runners that are having the best success are the guys that were at the bottom. The, you know, Carlos Williams in Buffalo, Thomas Rawls. These are guys that are either UDFAs or late guys in the draft, and then everybody else in the middle that you thought was going to be dynamic in this very deep class has had some struggles along the way. So it's a very interesting take, because we were all married to the idea that the Cowboys had to have one of these guys to take over their backfield, and their running game might be in the exact same situation if they had drafted one of those guys anyway. So it's a very interesting look, and that's why I wanted to get it out during the bye week, just so people could read up. I hope they go to Cowboys HQ, take a look at that article, and see what's going on with the running back position around the NFL. Now, that, of course, is not the only news of the day. The Cowboys did return to practice, and with that, we need an update on the injured stars. We got two dynamic guys back from suspension last week, and now we're waiting to hear what's going to happen with these injured guys. So give us an update on the two guys everybody is hoping will suit up against the Giants.
Yeah, Randy Gregory participated in practice today. This has been a long ankle sprain.
Yeah, it is.
There's no question now he's going to be ready against the Giants. And they're going to throw four, five, and six guys at you as a defensive line that are really going to be – I mean, if they can stop you on first down, you're in trouble on second and third down with this defensive line. Dez Bryant did not practice, but Jason Garrett in the walk-off, not on the radio – but afterwards said, well, Dez isn't practicing today, but we really like his progress. Well, that's quite a positive statement. He had to make clear that Dez wasn't going to practice on Wednesday, which would suggest that it's coming. And I don't know why anybody's really shocked about this. It's newsworthy, but it's not shocking. It fits exactly the schedule that Dez and the Cowboys have given me and given Cowboys HQ all along. The idea that he might be healed after six and would play in less than eight. And here come the New York Giants.
Well, I think Cowboys fans worldwide are praying that that can happen. The return of Dez Bryant to go along with a switch at quarterback to somebody that hopefully can perform better than what Whedon did against New England. The defense on the rise. It gives Cowboys fans a glimmer of hope that all is not lost, and they won't be sitting at 2-7 when Tony Romo returns. And that's pretty much all that they can ask for is a glimmer of hope. The NFC East teams will play each other over the next few weeks as well. So nobody should be able to separate as long as the Cowboys can get a couple wins. And it's looking like they're on their way to having their full complement of players to try to affect that change. Fish, I'm going to let you go so you can enjoy your time in the sports hub that is DFW right now.
Thank you.
All right, Fish. We'll talk to you soon, man. And that'll just about do it for this episode of Cowboys Crunch Time with KD. Thank you so much again for joining us. Special thanks to my guest, the one and only Bob Sturm. Follow him on Twitter at SportsSturm. And, of course, Cowboys insider Mike Fisher at Fish Sports. Make sure you're tuning in next week as we will have a special edition of Cowboys Crunch Time with KD. The host of the Blog and the Boys podcast, Rabble Rouser and Landon McCool, will join us here for a Knights of the Roundtable discussion on all things Cowboys with myself, Joey Ikes, and of course, co-host Keith Mullins will be making his return. You do not want to miss that podcast. That's it for now. Follow me on Twitter at KDDrummondNFL, and of course, read along, view along, CowboysHQ.com for all of your needs about our Dallas Cowboys. You know what it is. Salute. I know way too many people here right now that I didn't know last year. Who the fuck are y'all? I swear it feels like the last few nights we've been everywhere and back, but I just can't remember it all. What am I doing? What am I doing? Oh yeah, that's right, I'm doing me. I'm doing me. I'm living life right now, man, and this what I'ma do till it's over. Till it's over. It's far from over. One thing about music, when it hits you, feel no pain. And I swear I got this shit that make these bitches go insane. So they tell me that they love me, I know better than that. It's just game, it's just what comes with the fame. And I'm ready for that, I'm just saying. But I really can't complain. Everything is kosher. Two thumbs up, Eva and Roper. I really can't see the end getting any closer. But I'll probably still be the man when everything is over. So I'm riding through the city with my high beams on. Can you see me? Can you see me? Get your vibes in on. Y'all just do not fit the picture. Turn your widescreen on. If you thinking I'ma quit before I die, dream on. Man, they treat me like a legend. Am I really this cold? I'm really too young to be feeling this old. It's about time you admit it. Who you kidding? Man, nobody's ever done it like I did it. I know way too many people here right now that I didn't know last year. Who the fuck are y'all? I swear it feels like the last few nights we've been everywhere and back, but I just can't remember it all. What am I doing? What am I doing? Oh yeah, that's right, I'm doing me. I'm doing me. I'm living life right now, man, and this what I'ma do till it's over. Till it's over. But it's far from over. Yeah, that's right, I'm doing me. I'm doing me. I'm living life right now, man, and this what I'ma do till it's over. Till it's over.